Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Right, here we go then. We've got an extra bonus podcast for you. After the marathon effort we put in on the last episode, we thought we'd just make this little separate one. Yeah, so the Women's Six Nations is on at the moment.
So, yeah, people confuse my not watching women's rugby as some sort of ingrained sexism. I mean, I guess it is if you consider me not watching the Pro 14 in the same vein. I just see it as a different league. I don't want to watch it. It's just, like you say, so much. Well, I'm basically Premiership focused. If you gave me the choice of watching Six Nations or the Premiership, I would genuinely watch the Premiership. And if you gave me the choice of watching Six Nations or Toc H versus Oldham, I'd probably watch Toc H versus Oldham. So, yeah, I have my favourites.
Oh, definitely. But there you go. If you want to watch live Women's Six Nations rugby, then fantastic that you can. I think we're at a point in women's rugby where the chasms are vast in some nations, and over time that will equalize.
Well, I think actually that's a very good reason to watch this documentary. So the reason I've watched it is because
This is No Woman No Try, which is on Amazon Prime.
Yep, and it's made by a lady called Victoria Rush, and people have been saying how inspiring or brave or whatever else it may be. So it's made quite a lot of social media noise. So I sat down and I watched it last night. I watched my rugby highlights and then I watched
just
this.
Just asking, what prompted you to watch it, JB?
Well, I was criticised, obviously, on social media. And I've got a theory that...
For what?
It was regarding...
You need to be more specific, mate.
Yeah, I was criticised on social media because I have a real big problem with a campaign run by Saracens. Now, I don't want to go into that, but that led me to encounter a subsection of women's rugby, which is not women's rugby at all. It's nothing to do with the women that actually play the sport. I have no problem with them at all. But some of the creepiness around some of the men that seem to hang around on the edges, which I kind of think might be the biggest problem in women's rugby, which is creepy men. But that, again, is a discussion for another day. But I was accused of not paying it much attention, which is true, and that I should watch this documentary. So that's exactly what I did. And I've got to say, I'm fairly mixed on it. What was your initial impression of it, Tim?
I think, mixed is kind of good. What I would say, first and foremost, and this is actually one of the things that I was disappointed there wasn't more of on it. And had I had more time and had I not been coaching my own son's team and doing this little charity event yesterday, I sound like smashy and nice here. They're doing a lot of great work for charity. I don't like to talk about it. Had I not had a busy weekend and also for the purpose of the podcast, wanted to make sure I watched the rugby so I knew what I was talking about. I would have watched some of the Six Nations based on this documentary, which I am mixed about. The reason being, the actual rugby part of it, the tiny, tiny little glimpses of the actual rugby that you got, look great.
Yeah, I agree with that. Here is how I'd summarise it. Probably the most confused hour of viewing I've ever seen. It makes some good points, and then it makes some absolute nonsense points. And I'm starting, when you watch it and you think, what is this program about? Is it about rugby or is it about something else?
Is it about social media?
Is
it about business? Is it about business? Is it about philanthropy?
yeah, the social media aspect of it is incredible. It's incredible because they keep on circling back to social media. Whether it be how can you be an ally? Well, you just share us on social media. What do you need to do? Social media seems to be the biggest problem they simultaneously all face and also the solution to all their problems. I'm not sure it can be both, but yeah, they seem to be addicted to the thing. And to be fair to them, I know the feeling. I know exactly the feeling. I just wouldn't make a documentary about it.
You're right. So just so no one's confused if they haven't seen it, this is a documentary about the women's rugby in England specifically.
Well, it's hard to know what it's about, really, isn't it? I mean, it's a women's rugby-based documentary, but what is it actually about?
It was sort of part celebration of some of the characters who've got the game to where it is and are aspiring to push it on, and also part exploration of the reasons why it hasn't done so faster.
I'm not sure any of those things stack up. I'll tell you why shortly. But that's why I think it's so such a confused bit of programming, because it seems to be celebrating women's rugby, and then it tells you everything which is wrong with women's rugby, and then everything which is wrong with it seems to be countered literally inside the programme itself as to why women's rugby is doing so well. And I can't really make heads or tails as to actually why they even made this.
Well, I'll tell you what, Phil, you haven't seen it. Where's your perspective from the outside on where women's rugby is currently?
Good question. I think the point you made before about the chasms in women's rugby is evident when you're watching the Six Nations. There are two very good teams, and there are probably three very good teams in world rugby, three or four maybe, with New Zealand definitely at the same level as England and France. And everyone else, it seems like it's an afterthought. Everyone else have very, very few either professional players or professional leagues. So there are enormous gaps in it. In England, we are fortunate that there is a professional league, or certainly a full-time serious league with then professional players who are contracted centrally as part of it. In terms of where the landscape is, it's hard to say more than that.
Hey, how about this? How about we do the fair thing and we talk about what we liked about this?
Yeah.
Because there is actually quite a lot of stuff to like in it, and I think that's probably the best place to stop.
I now know some characters in the sport that I didn't know before.
Yeah.
And some of them are very engaging and interesting individuals.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And talented athletes.
So, by far, the most engaging people and the stars of this whole documentary are Shauna Brown, and I think his name's Zeynep, but I'm not sure the surname. Almir, I think. Now, Shauna Brown, after watching her, I'm genuinely interested. I want to see what she does next. She is obviously a phenomenal rugby player. Do you know what she reminds me of? Watching her story. This sounds like a bizarre one to compare it to. Do you remember an NFL quarterback called Drew Henson?
No.
So Drew Henson was the guy who started ahead of Tom Brady back in the day. And his story was he was such a talented athlete, he could either play quarterback, and he did, for both Michigan and indeed the Dallas Cowboys, or he'd go and be a professional baseball player. And in America, this is quite common, where you get athletes who are just so dominant, they pick their sport. And you look at Shauna Brown's story, and she's done all of these, it was athletics, and then there's various video of it.
Well, on the what's his name? Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly. Exactly. She strikes me as like the standard athlete that if she was in America, she would have all sorts of options open to her as a collegiate athlete. I just think in the UK, those options for that athlete just don't exist. You either play football, cricket or rugby, but you don't get any crossovers like you do in America. And she just strikes me as that sort of athlete. So I think her story, and I think what she says as well, she's very clear-headed about almost all subjects. And I think that's really refreshing, because she comes at it purely from an athlete's point of view. And every time she speaks in the whole documentary, I think, yeah, that stacks up. And she does this over and over again. And I don't think her role in the documentary was actually to do that. I think her role in the documentary was there to show exactly what brilliant athletes that the women's game has has access to, and they accidentally stumbled into someone who really recognises the problems with women's rugby and how to cure it. And she does it very subtly, but in my mind, very, very convincingly.
I agree. Really engaging. I think, the stories that we were introduced to, and also, do you know, the big positive, one of the big positives actually runs for me of the documentary, and as we've been talking about in weeks gone by, actually runs contrary to one of the sort of undercurrents or actually in your face thrust of the documentary. I think one of the positives is what a brilliant shape in England women's rugby is world beating. Literally world beating.
Yeah, I mean, I have some problems with that, actually. I certainly have a bit problems with it at the top of the game, as we'll discuss later. But certainly in the community game, you're absolutely right. The women's game, the girls' game lower down is in rude health. And, that is an amazing thing. If you go down to a club on a Sunday, there are as many female players now as male players. And that sort of leads me on to the other character, Zainab. So the phrase that I love from her is her initial phrase, where she says, neonatal nurse by profession, rugby player by passion. I think, yeah, that is like 99% of the men that play. There's nothing unusual here. She's just followed the same path as you or I or Phil or anyone. So you can immediately identify with these two players. One is a high-level pro, and one is just coming in through the amateur ranks, although she has incredibly high aspirations. And I think one of the nicest parts of the entire documentary is when she looks at the rule book and she goes, yeah, clear as day, I can wear the hijab. Perfect.
That's quite a cool story, because you're right, that is something that most people play in. We have the visibility of the top 1 or 2% of people who play professionally, but the enormous weight of people by numbers are the people like the three of us who played at various different levels, but all under the top level of the pyramid. And that's what most people do. They play as something they did in their childhood, and then something that you do as a release on weekends and as enjoyment and fun.
Now, where I think the documentary, and along with that, where the mindset of this runs into issues for me, at least, is exactly what you just mentioned, Phil, that there is a pyramid. And the principle is that the bigger the base of the pyramid, as in the bigger the community game, the more infrastructure, the more organic, the more volunteers that help at the base level, then at the top level, you have more resources, more infrastructure, more support, and necessarily there is more eyeballs on it, therefore more sponsorship and investment and stuff. And that's something which happens organically and which is dictated by the market. And I just got a sense that there was an expectation that organic growth and that building that base level and then waiting for the pyramid to grow upwards, it should be inverted some way. And actually it's almost, well, the men get paid, so why aren't we getting paid? Which that's not how anything works. That's not how anything is built.
Well, just before you go on to that, I'm glad you mentioned markets, because markets comes to mind. And this was probably where I really started to depart from this documentary. So I've mentioned the two easily the most engaging characters. That is those are the two people that you should watch this documentary for. The other two, mixed reviews. But one of the things which I really am impressed with, in fact, I'd go as far to say I'm inspired by, because I get inspired by this sort of stuff, but somehow they dress it up as a disaster, is the women's shorts issue.
Yes.
So the women's shorts issue is really interesting. Okay, so obviously we've not had women in the game for that long. Yes, people will point out that women have been playing for a long time, but as a mass sport, in terms of just the gross numbers, it is far bigger now than it has been previously. So it's a relatively new thing. So as women come into the game, obviously we need to tailor kit to them. And I would never have thought of this. I would have said, look, we've opened up the clubhouse, we've sorted out the changing facilities, we've given you a fixture list.
Coaches, referees.
We are trying to facilitate this game. So the fact that one of them pointed out at the shorts are made for men, and therefore this is a sign of ingrained sexism, blew my mind. But this is where I think differently to the contributors to this film. Because if I love the sport just like they love the sport, and we actually get to the same position here, which I think is brilliant, I would say it's not a disaster that I don't have shorts that don't fit me. It's amazing because I've got this incredible business opportunity. So I don't understand like the whinging, because it's like, oh my God, we've got sexism ingrained in the sport because I don't have the right shorts. Simultaneously, they've actually fixed the issue that they've encountered by doing exactly what you should do, which is setting up a clothing brand to sell shorts. So I thought the rugged, like the rugged short stuff, or the Rugats, which is the brand, was absolutely brilliant. Because that's how you solve problems, isn't it? You identify a problem and you take it upon your own shoulders to solve it. And if you've solved a really good problem, you can make a bit of money too. And I think that is absolutely awesome. So if you're a woman and you want to play, there is a brand for you called Rugats. And that's not to say other brands shouldn't do it, but they've solved the problem. And that's brilliant. That's exactly how
they have solved the problem. And you could parallel this. This is not a male-female thing. This is how every single business has been built in the history of businesses.
You find a problem, you solve it.
Yeah, and when there is a critical mass of need, someone will come in and do that. It isn't that Adidas or Canterbury or whoever it is are sexist. It's that, I'm just thinking, Umbro wouldn't have made rugby kit if there weren't enough rugby players that they gave a damn about making the England kit.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Look, if I wanted to get into curling tomorrow, okay, with the little granite stones and whatnot, and Umbro didn't make me the exact right curling equipment for my needs on the ice, I wouldn't assume it's because they hate curlers. I'd assume because they just don't have a market need, or no one's discovered it. So if you're looking for women's shorts, I hope that Rugats really does set the market alight. I hope that lots of people buy it, and they should do, because they're the original brand who originally solved the problem. But then I hope other brands follow suit because there's profit. So I think that's actually a really good story of the best way for women's rugby to solve women's issues, which is solve it. If you've seen a problem, go and solve it. And it's not about some systemic problem. It's about solving issues.
And I think that's it. All of the problems that were identified, you could have been coming out of the mouth of a championship rugby player.
Yeah. And there is an element of this, which I can't help but feel. It's just ungratefulness. There's no other way that I can think of it. So, down the level that I play, I'm just grateful that we can play. It doesn't matter to me if I change on the side of the road. It doesn't matter if I play on a waterlogged pitch, although for some reason they stop us doing that. The other week we played on a pitch which is just not suitable. It was covered in snow with the only club in the Northwest playing. Every time I get to pull on my boots, I'm grateful for the opportunity to pull on my boots, whether it be with 11 players or 15 players, whatever it is. And I think there's an element in the higher up of women's rugby. They think this is just not good enough. What we're getting is not good enough. And I think they lose the joy of the game. Now, we mentioned the first two characters. I don't really apply that to them. The second two characters, however, they seem to think that everything in the world is against them. And the more that I listen to them, I'm thinking like, do you actually enjoy what you're doing? Do you enjoy playing rugby? Because you say you do. And then you reflect on it and you see everything that you're doing in this game through a prism of, the word that was used, the phrase that was used usually was accessing power. I thought, this is incredibly unhealthy. I mean, you don't access power through playing rugby. You don't access power through how you look. And the more I heard it, I just thought, they can't be enjoying what they're doing. Their whole life must be an absolute nightmare to see everything through the prism of, quote, accessing power. I don't even know what that means, frankly.
Well, I would actually say that in terms of, if you want to take that phrase on, then women's rugby has accessed power in the sense that professional sides, again, the pyramid base of which and the support of which and the financing of which was built over the last 150 years of it being a men's sport, they're accessing the training facilities, the coaching, the pitches, the infrastructure of those clubs, and I'm all for that. That's fantastic. The clubs have obviously spotted and obviously realised this is an important part of the growth of of our club and our organisation. And there's obviously and there's a load of funding, and the RFU are giving way more coverage to the Allianz Premier 15s, which has a title sponsor as well. They're giving way more coverage to that. They're putting production budget behind it. They're giving a platform on their Facebook page and YouTube and stuff to actually stream games. And we've been talking about what an unbelievably good product and how good a quality is the Championship, which has thousands of people turning up at their games, and they can't get a sponsor or any coverage anywhere. And the RFU don't seem to be remotely interested in them. So I actually think gratitude is one of the words I came away from thinking about it.
Where's the gratitude?
Where's the gratitude for some great strides have been made, but choices have also been taken. And I think at some point you could look at it and go, well, they've gone, forget about anything below the Premiership and let's focus on the women's. And I haven't necessarily got an issue with that per se, but be grateful that if actually that's the decision taken that's benefited you and your sport. Because a lot of those women are professional, not because of the gate receipts that are being taken, but because of decisions that have been taken by a union on spending all of our sports money. And I haven't got a problem with that, but be grateful.
I'm not saying be grateful when you're treated badly. I'm not saying anything like that.
Oh, no, of course not.
I'm also not saying be grateful, when... Basically, what I said before, when you've been treated poorly. But I just think about playing this game and the opportunities that have arisen for me. And every opportunity that I've had has been limited by my talent. But if Sail Sharks said to me when I was in my 20s, you can have a week training here, you can wear the Sail Sharks shirt, you can wear the Sail Jet shirt, wear any of those shirts, and I'd do it for free. And that, to me, would be one of the proudest moments that you could have. Or if Lancashire came calling, or anything like that. Now, one of the ladies in this is constantly talking about sexism and access and power. She plays for Bristol Bears. I mean, that is such a privilege. Just pulling on the Bristol Bears shirt, for anyone who has played rugby for any length of time around the Bristol area, if you get contacted by Bristol and called up even to a training squad, that's an incredible thing. I don't think it should be taken for granted. And I think that's you think, have they acknowledged what an incredible thing that they're actually doing here? And if they have, for me, that would be enough. But there again, I'm not an aspiring professional athlete, am I? And that might be the difference.
Yeah, I can understand that perspective, though, as in like your perspective, that from my time, when I was... probably knew I was never going to make it at the highest level, but just getting the opportunity to play at a good level meant the world to me. And never really for much money, never really for the glamorous locations or anything like that, but just being able to play the highest level that my talents would allow me, that meant the absolute world to me. And that's what we trained for, we put all the effort in, what our parents helped us out when we were kids led us up to. So I think I was always grateful just to get the opportunity to play at that level.
Well, you totally got that gratitude and excitement, like you say, from Shauna Brown. She just was buzzing to be have the opportunity to train and just that's what she had to do. She didn't have to balance a job at the same time, which thousands of people up and down the land do and do gladly with a big smile on their face.
That blew my mind. That absolutely blew my mind. They said, what we're expected to do, hold down a job and then go training. I'm like... what do you think I've done for 20 years? Like, that's what the majority... that's what people, lads in the Championship are doing.
I do get the difference, though, between playing level 6, level 8, even level 4, to playing...
level 2?
Well, they're playing on the world stage. So they do have the eyes of the world.
The Premier 15s isn't, but yeah, I take your point.
If you're playing for World Cup final for England versus New Zealand or England versus France, whoever makes it.
Well, the England players are fully professional.
Yeah, okay. That's
so. We need to just get into this bit, okay? So the professional bit really, really irks me, because when you make one team professional, you effectively have such a... I mean, there's a reason the salary cap exists in rugby. The salary cap exists because we don't want to distort the balance of competitiveness throughout that league. And I think when you make one team professional, in this case England, and only a handful of others professional, you distort the balance. England got so much money, they can afford to make 30, is it 28 or 38
28,
players?
28, I think.
28 players professional. That comes from central funding, and I understand why they want to do it. But you must also acknowledge you ruin the women's game in the same way that if one team in the Premiership had 28 of the highest paid players, it would be a farce. You know, that this is why these things exist. So then you've got to ask yourself the second question, right, which is why do we pay players? We pay them for two reasons. So in the men's game, we pay them because to be a full-time professional, you need to give up your job. And to give up your job, it's not just the money that you're losing by not being at your job, it's all of the accumulated experience. And by the time that you get to, say, 30 and you're about to retire, you're then ready for your big pay rise. And actually, that's when your rugby salary will probably cross over with your civilian salary, if you like. Okay, so that's why we pay them. The second reason that we pay them is because to be at the level, to be at the top level of men's rugby, there's so many guys out there, it's so competitive that you need to train full-time. Now, the fact there's only 28 full-time ladies tells me that the league is not competitive enough yet to sustain more than 28, or there would be 28 ladies played by clubs and by everywhere else. And this isn't an argument which they should be afraid of, really, because if you can be the best in the world, if I could be the best male player in the world at my position, hold down a full-time job, and still play international on the weekends, I would do that. That is a deal that I would take. And I think that's how the women need to look at it. Because 30 grand or whatever they get paid a year, in my mind, is not enough to replace your professional earnings. So by the time you get to 30, you've not earned enough money, in my mind, for this whole endeavour to be worth it. So they're getting paid, but they're getting paid just to live. They'd be better off, and I'd make this argument to a lot of players, you'd be better off being the best you could be, holding down another career and then finishing off as one of the best in the world whilst actually making sure that you're okay for the rest of your life. I don't think the professional thing helps the women that are being paid or indeed the wider women's game.
I get that argument, especially in a scenario where, unfortunately, at the moment, the market doesn't work so that the leagues can be, the clubs can be fully professional. So you can compete at that level, both play in the Allianz Premiership and also internationally without being full-time professional. So the trade-off to have a full-time professional contract and not be able to work on the side and build up your experience in another role, it seems like it's not worth it.
Yeah, it's almost not fair.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you should turn down the opportunity to play international rugby, because that would be exactly you've described, Jay. That would be my absolute dream. When I was working and studying and playing full-time rugby, doing a master's and playing semi-professional rugby at tier two while doing a full-time job and studying for a master's, that was an absolute nightmare. But logistically, from a time perspective, from a training perspective, from a travel perspective, but I'd do it again in a heartbeat because it's such a good experience and opportunity. And I was never saying I should be paid full time.
Yeah,
because I wouldn't, if someone had offered me at that point, unless I was going to go full time pro, i.e., be earning 100k plus, like proper Premiership salary for a good Premiership player, it wouldn't have been worth the trade off for me.
I'm watching this, I completely, I'm 100% with you, Phil. And I went through similar tales. We've talked on the podcast before about those, you know, you're taking up your whole weekend with a bus trip to Redruth. And
yeah,
any day, loved those days. They were amazing. But there's a phrase from Theodore Roosevelt, which I think is apt here. And he said, comparison is the thief of joy. And you've talked about this before.
That's a great saying.
You it's a brilliant phrase, and you've talked about this before. I think part of the issue here is that just because you look at the England men's players and they are paid handsomely, don't compare yourself. You can't and shouldn't compare yourself, and they're paid handsomely, and that is no justification in and of itself for you to be paid more. And likewise, the fact that the Premiership in men's rugby is full-time professional is no justification for the fact the Allianz Women's 15 League being fully professional. Wouldn't it be amazing if that was possible?
The comparison thing is really a really good point, because what the documentary really did for me was highlight what women's rugby needs more than anything else. It's a point of difference. So if women's rugby is going to go down this route of just being exactly the same as the men's, but we should watch it because it's played by women, it's not going to work. We can pretend it's going to work. We can mouth the platitudes and say they're just as good and it's just as compelling. But men's rugby is built on the physical dominance and yada yada yada. Women's rugby needs to do something different. It needs to offer the viewer some different experience. And I'll give you an example of how stupid some of the thinking around this is. Same which I've said on other podcasts. They have got the opportunity to mould their sport however they want.
They've got a blank bit of paper. You've said this before. Correct. They've got a blank bit of paper.
Why are they copying the men? Why are they even looking at this absolute disaster, which is the men's sport, saying, yeah, we want to do that. We want to have 12 loss-making clubs. We want constant conflict between the union and the clubs. We want to have a calendar which doesn't make any sense to anyone. We want to have a Lions team which will mess up absolutely every other union in the world except for our four. Why are they doing this? And the only thing I can possibly think of is that the mind of the people making these decisions is so polluted with this unfairness, this perceived unfairness, that they're leading all these women that want to play rugby down a dead end. That's the only thing. And they're doing so whilst getting praised for it and being lauded as brave. And I just see it as stupid and frankly, reckless.
I wish they could see the opportunity more than be bogged down by comparing. Because like you say, but the necessity of comparing is that you want, we want a bit more of that. And then they'll gradually, step by step, get closer to the men's game. That seems to be the sole comparative point. And it's measured, the success of the women's game is measured on how close they can get it to the men's game in terms of money and crowds and all the rest of it. But actually, I think the way to get the money and the crowds is exactly as you said. The women's game could do what the men's game has never been able to do, get a global season sorted. They could do that tomorrow.
It could be the leaders.
They could organise IPL Type 7s events tomorrow as part of that global season. They could do this global league system, which World Rugby were never able to get off the ground like that. And then you've got products which people can really engage with, things that people can watch. It might be an IPL Type 7s tournament that you can dip in for a three-weekend period, or it might be your global season international, autumn international and spring international tournaments, which you tune in for six-week blocks. And then that might lead you into watching domestic leagues in whatever country it is. So, think bigger.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So I think a lot of the tone of this, well, obviously will come from Victoria Rush, who made this. And I cannot decide whether Victoria Rush is absolutely brilliant or not, to put it mildly.
Everyone had the very best of intentions. There's no doubt there. We all have the same objective.
But I don't know. I don't know, actually. I don't know. So let me just describe how I would... Okay, so first of all, is she that bright in terms of what she's saying? I mean, the way that she sees the world, you might say, no, she's not. But then I think of it from a different point of view. Like, if you met a flat earther and you asked them about their worldview, You can either say they're very stupid because they think the world is flat, or you can say they're incredibly clever because they've managed to, in their own mind, devise a system where the world could be flat and all of the connected facts that they have to make up in conjunction to believing the world is flat to facilitate their worldview. And I think Victoria Rush might be in that second category, which is incredibly bright, but wasted it entirely on a worldview that just doesn't exist. So she's made this whole documentary, and some of the stuff in it, just, I don't even know if it's true. I'll give you an example. Here was something which made the documentary. It's rare for women to have a place to be physical. Now, that on its face sounds like a really reasonable proposition. Then I thought, actually, where do men be physical? Like, outside of rugby, what do we have? Boxing? Well, women have that. MMA? Women definitely have that. I mean, one of the most successful MMA fighters of all time was a woman.
Fights outside a pub on a Friday night?
Is that what you want? I mean, you can do it. If you want to fight outside a pub, you can.
It is the point that far fewer women historically have played,
have competed.
Yeah. The percent of men who do physical contact sports, like the ones you've listed, would be reasonably high, certainly a lot higher than the percent of women who would do the same thing.
And again, some people would get offended by me saying this. So again, I'll just say it's coming from someone who studied psychology when I say this. Men are, on average, more aggressive. That's a trait.
That's a trait.
So there probably are more men who are attracted to those kind of things, which might be the reason for the numbers, that there aren't the opportunities.
I just ask a simple question. What is the opportunity a man has to be aggressive that a woman doesn't within a sporting arena? Which is the sport that they're referring to that they can't do? Which is it? Because I think that's a throwaway comment.
Once you're in the sporting arena, it's the same. But if 50% of men go into those sporting arenas and 10% of women go into those sporting arenas,
there might not be teams in every town.
I guess so. I guess that'd be fair, wouldn't it? Which is like there's not a rugby club in every town.
Yeah, but then you would come back to, well, what is the reason behind that? And probably, Tim, you've got a very good point as to what the reason behind that is, because men, I would assume, are more attracted to that kind of danger, excitement, physicality, aggression.
The only sport I can think of which you can be aggressive in, which isn't available to both sex, is roller derby. But that doesn't really fit the problem, does it, really? I mean, that's not really helping anyone. So, yeah. And also, there's another thing which Victoria Rush says. It's not on this documentary, but it really gives you an insight to how she thinks about things. And she gives a breakdown of the terms used to describe men's sports and male athletes and the terms used to describe female athletes. So men are like aggressive and brave and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And as you'd expect, the female terms are skillful and, you know, elegant and whatever it is. But you kind of get what I'm saying. So her proposition is we need to attract more, she wants to attract more women into sport. And I think we can both agree that is a fine objective. There's nothing wrong with that. But then she goes on to say the reason they don't come into sport is because journalists describe them in different ways, and it's up to journalists to describe them in equal ways. But she's wrong, and she's wrong because we have had women who have been described in these similar terms. I think of Ronda Rousey in the UFC, and she was described in all the typically masculine ways, and she had a massive following, but her following was, guess what? Men. The UFC didn't flourish throughout women. It attracted a very particular type of woman to compete, but it wasn't a mainstream female sport. It is mainstream amongst men. So it makes me think that when she's saying that men and women need to be described in the same way, she's wrong. Men need to be described in one way to attract a male audience. And if your goal, right, is to attract women into sport, it would stand to reason that you need to describe them in a different way. And this is where I think that she uses all her brain power, you know, looking for crimes against women which just aren't there, when actually she'd be thinking, no, we need to approach this differently. And it goes back to what I said before. Women's rugby needs to offer something different to men's rugby if you want to attract more women into it.
And to that point, I came away, and the only real suggestion that was given to me as if I want to help, it's put a tweet out, retweet something. That's basically that was kind of the main takeaway. What can you do? Tweet. Tell you know, tell someone where they can watch it. Well, I really care about this sport. I've got a daughter. I want her to be active and interested. I know some people that play at the some women that play at the local rugby club, and I want them to have a great sport and a great infrastructure and stuff. And I think we've put some suggestions together, which are far, far bigger and more wide reaching and could have much bigger consequences than putting out a tweet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that it just kept on coming back to tweets, there's a saying about a certain political leader at the moment. I'm not going to say who, because, you know, this might upset a few people, but they say he's not influenced by Twitter, but all of his staff are. And I kind of feel they're talking to Twitter. They're not talking to women. They're not talking to men that might be interested. They're just talking in this documentary to Twitter, and that's it. And you can even see in the, you know, they show an example in the documentary where it flashes up with a YouTube clip and some anonymous trolls. I'm like, well, who cares? Who cares? I mean, if that is the worst thing that you've got to face, who cares? And I tell you what, I felt really, really bad for one of the girls in there. She was telling us about her school experiences and bullying and all those terrible things, yada, yada, yada. And all she was describing to me is what school is like. You know, school can be horrific. It can be horrific for anybody. And believe you me, all boys school with a speech impediment, it can be horrific. But if you get to the age of 25 and you're still referencing your school experiences, I don't think I can help you. I think you actually need to go and get professional help. There is no, adults should not be casting their minds back to their school experiences and then saying, well, this is why I behave like I do as an adult. It's just, well, not acceptable.
Well, I'd actually say, well, no, I'd say it's okay to, it's absolutely fine and actually quite brave to, on a documentary, talk about that. Like, just as I'd find it admirable and brave if when you on your podcast say I had a speech impediment, I got some serious shit when I was a kid.
Yeah, but that's not brave. That's just saying, yeah, this is what happened. And you might say, and for that reason, I would never bully someone with that impediment. But what I'd never say is, well, this all happened, and therefore, I will behave like this as an adult. And make it almost like a focal point of my adulthood. It's like that. It's like she's living in the past, and I just felt sorry for her.
I'm glad I spent the hour watching it. I learned about some characters I had no that I didn't know, and I, like you say, Shauna Brown is cool and like great character, really brilliant.
Yeah,
story.
I really wish this documentary had more Shauna Browns in it, because that was actually really interesting.
I was going to say on the podcast, someone that was sort of touched on briefly, but on the podcast, we had a great chat with Rachel Burford. She is absolutely awesome at the World Rugby Awards. We had a great chat with her. She's absolutely ace. And there are characters and there are these stories, and I really love it when you get these positive stories of people loving what they do, and it can be the sacrifices they've made, the choices they had to make, the forks that were in the road in their career, what made them pick up a rugby ball in the first place. I love all that. I love that with the men's game. I love that with the women's game. Those stories are universal, men, women, whatever age. And that's what we should hear, because that makes these people real and accessible. And that's why I really like Shauna Brown's story.
Here's one for you. This is just a purely editorial thing. I don't know how they made this mistake. Ugo comes on. He says one of his heroes is this woman. So it cuts this woman called Sue. And I picked up her name, Sue. And Sue says something, and it cuts back to the other girl whose name escapes me at the moment. What was her name? Victoria Rush. And Victoria Rush then says, well, the woman that needs no introduction. I'm thinking, she absolutely does. I have no idea who this woman is. Do you know the one that I mean, Tim?
Yeah, this kind of sports administrator, advocate, business leader type.
But what is she? Like, I would say, if you're talking to a new audience, you absolutely need to introduce this woman as something else other than the woman that needs no introduction. I mean, I was watching her for 5 minutes. I'm like, I'm not going to Google her. This is your job. This is your job to tell me. The only thing that I knew about her towards the end is she's listened to a little bit of economics. and that she's written a book, because they've got her filmed reading her own book, which doesn't seem like a likely a bit of footage that they were likely to randomly snap. But that's all I knew about her. I thought, if you're making a program, you need to introduce who this expert is.
When she gets introduced, it flipped to being more proactive. She was coming at it like there's an incentive for businesses to get on board with this now. We've got a growth curve that's accelerating. We've got a critical mass of people. We've got a really good England women's team that are doing fantastically on the world stage. We've got loads of young girls getting involved. There's reasons for people to invest in this now. And I go, okay, here we go. That sounds a bit more proactive. That's how these things work.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, one of the ways this program really lets itself down is it has these really minor problems with women's game, like the shorts, which was easily solved by making shorts. And it sort of overlooks that they're training at Bristol Bears and there is investment and there are pros. Now, you know, I've got problems with there being pros, but you can't deny that there are lots of pros. Brilliant. There's one, you know, they seem to make up their own reality. So they give all these numbers about, you know, how attractive the women's game is. And if these numbers are true, then the only reason that the women's game isn't shown is purely because of sexism. Okay, well, that might be the case, but can you tell me which the sexist broadcaster is? I mean, I don't think it's BT Sport. BT Sport have got more campaigns than you can wave a stick at. So it's not BT Sport, is it Amazon? Are they the sexists? You can't just say it's sexist. Show me who the sexists are. Or if you think it's truly that attractive, such an attractive investment proposition, find some investors. I mean, investors are interested in one thing. That's the beautiful thing about capitalism, money. Like, they, do you think if you could double or triple your money and own this amazing sports product, some faceless hedge fund wouldn't do it? They'd do it in a second. It just, you know, these are the things which I think the documentary really lets itself down on. Because if you were watching this and you were thinking of getting into rugby, you wouldn't be sure if it's an incredibly well-resourced game with the likes of Harlequin standing behind it and the RFU not throwing money, but funding it, and all these great training sessions and all the pictures of the gym and all the good work that, say, Richmond Rugby Club do and all these women playing, or it's this sexist, you know, passive-aggressive sexist hellhole. I don't know what it was trying to do, really.
Well, on that, and I actually think this is the kind of thing the BBC is there for, because they don't have the commercial things, targets they need to hit to break even and do the things you just described. But the front page of the Rugby Union, top story, England win gives me good problems, says Middleton, referring to England's 12-try emphatic win, which the match report is the second story. Resurgent Wales ready for England acid test is the third story. Highlights, 12-try England thrash Italy, fourth story. Fifth story, what a force of nature, Burns scores superb try. Then, sixth story, Harlequins hammer Irish to strengthen playoff bid. The champions of England, yep, playing in front of 20-odd thousand people in a West London derby match, which was watched by probably 500,000 people or more on BT Sport, is the sixth story down. That's not a complaint. That's actually me saying the fact that's the BBC. But if the Times don't publish more than a brief summary article, it's because there isn't the incentive there for them to do it.
Yeah. Now, that's a really interesting point. I'm so glad you mentioned that. The Six Nations is moving. And Shauna Brown said this. And again, when she speaks in this documentary, it's worth listening to and just reflecting on what she says, because often she nails things. And I'm not even sure she means to. But the Six Nations was moved. And initially, it was like, oh, this is a disaster. But then it all made sense, didn't it? Because the women now have their own window where you can be interested. And the journalists who are paid to write about this stuff, they legit, you know, it's not fair to expect them to forego an England men's game, because that's how they make their money. That's how they make their money to fund everything else. But by moving the Women's Six Nations, you know, slightly, a few weeks later, the journalists can go and write about the women's game. So exactly as I've been saying throughout this entire podcast, the women's game needs to offer something different. It can't just be a pale impression. Shauna Brown gets this instantly.
She does get it.
Which is, yeah, now that it's been moved, people can come and watch us. Brilliant idea. And I think, you know, this, the progress in the women's game is going to be from hundreds of small tweaks like this, rather than this never-ending accusations of sexism against the people that are helping you the most. Oh, hang on. Hang on. No, no. We're not people that are helping the most. There's only one person that helps women's rugby the most. What did you think of Ugo's, his cameo in this? Ugo's role in women's rugby, which is not to question, not to ask. He says things like, I just want to be an ally. I want to sit here as a man and listen. What they need is questioning. They need scrutiny. They need everything that they do needs to be examined, see if it's for the best interest of the women's game. I don't think he comes up with a single suggestion of anything which is of any use. In fact, at one point he says, I would never have been able to achieve what I achieved in my career if I had to go through what you guys go through. Well, no, you wouldn't, Ugo, because the men's game is completely different. And if you're thinking through the scope of the women's game and the men's game got to be exactly the same, you're not helping the problem. You've got to sit down, you've got to think about it, identify the problems and come up with unique solutions.
All I would say is everybody, even the people you disagree with, Jay, everybody's coming at this with the very best of intentions. And we're all trying to achieve the same objective. And we have different opinions on, every individual will have different opinions on how you achieve objective.
I thought it was borderline cynical. I thought it was borderline, just to come on there and say, because what they're trying to do is they're saying, hey, if you're a man, this is how you should behave. You should sit here and listen, but only listen to a very particular type of viewpoint. And I don't think that helps the sport. I mean, imagine if the only way to help the RFU would be to sit and listen to Bill Sweeney and don't question him, just listen and be an ally. If you want to contribute, watch a documentary, think about the issues that have been raised, and then give your honest opinion.
After hearing this, I will watch it, definitely.
Yeah. It's really, it does some things really well, and it makes me really a lot more in. So what it sort of perversely proves the point here, that women's rugby content can indeed spur interest in women's rugby. I mean, this is no surprise, is it? The F1 documentary Drive to Survive is a perfect example of, content pushing people towards sport. It has to be sporting content, and it cannot be this never-ending sexism this or inequality that. It has to be because the sport stands on its own two feet, and the only way it'll ever do that is by offering you something different to what the men's game offers, and that's the problem that they need to solve. And as soon as they solve that problem, they'll have a thriving sport. I look forward to supporting it.
I can fully imagine that there'll be people that watch this and actually might watch the Six Nations, whether it's because of Shauna Brown, or at least they'll go, oh, there's Shauna Brown. And that is the takeaway here. Tell us more of those stories. If you're going to put content out, don't tell me that the sport I love is sexist
while simultaneously telling us how great it is.
When from my perspective, you look at England women's rugby is the envy of pretty much the rest of the world.
Yeah,
and that's
wrong.
And that can only be done when you have the buy-in of the sport as a whole, which means men as well. But watch it.
And
fair play. I'd love to have some rugby of any content. Don't care whether it's women, men or whatever. On Amazon or Netflix.
Yeah, I'd love this documentary to be done again. And I'd love it to be done with rugby as a focus rather than campaigning. That's what I'd love. And I think they'd have an absolute winner. That's the sad thing. It's a missed opportunity. It's relatively well-made missed opportunity.
So watch it.
There we go.
Very good.
Let the players play.
Yeah, indeed.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.